Mainframe is brought to you by Authority Rainmaker, a carefully designed live educational experience that presents a complete and effective online marketing strategy to help you immediately accelerate your business. Don't miss the opportunity to see Dan Pink, Sally Hogshead, punk legend Henry Rollins, and many other incredible speakers live. Not to mention the secret sauce of it all, building real-world relationships with other attendees. Get all the details right now at rainmaker.fm/event. And we look forward to seeing you in Denver, Colorado this May. That's rainmaker.fm/event.
Welcome to The Mainframe. I'm Chris Garrett, the CDO of Copyblogger, and I'm here today with my co-host, Tony Clark. He's the COO of Copyblogger. And today we're going to be talking about building your business with the MVP process. Hello, Tony. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing very good. I've been watching a little bit too much TV. We've been marathoning Parks and Recreation and very much enjoying it.
Yeah, we're on a Walking Dead pause so we can do House of Cards, and then we'll be back on there.
No spoilers, please.
And no, I know. Yeah, we were no spoilers at all.
I'm still on season two, and they're all horrible, horrible people. I'm glad I'm watching something comedy.
Yeah.
So today we're going to be talking about building your business with the MVP process. And this is a follow-on from last episode where we talked about how Copyblogger was built to be an eight-figure business using the minimum viable process. That was for both product creation and actually building the organization. So if you missed it, go check that out. Building with an MVP offers faster time to market, better customer experience, more effective launches, and allows you to bootstrap fund your company without getting external cash. And we're going to talk about the process of building with an MVP today in more detail. So you ready to go, Tony?
I'm ready.
So first, can you talk about a little bit the research process you went through when you launched that first product with Copyblogger, the teaching sales product?
Well, the teaching sales product was interesting because I brought some research from my previous company. When Brian and I got together, I had my own consulting company. I wanted to move more into content and production, marketing, that sort of thing. So I had this idea that I'd been developing to sell as part of my consulting company, which was sort of an educational product that was built around educational marketing. So educational marketing to teach educational marketing, sort of like this very meta thing. So I had been doing research in the field with clients for a year or more, building these sort of educational tools that taught people how to use those same type of educational tools to teach their own industry things. So I had already kind of had this idea, and I started, you know, asking questions and kind of really, you know, interviewing customers, interviewing clients and their clients to find out what it is they were looking for in this type of thing. So I had started researching before Brian and I got together. Then, you know, when I pitched the idea to Brian, we really massaged the idea a lot. That was a very collaborative process. And then, but it was built on that foundation of, this is something I have found out there that people are really looking for. So it was really just a matter of pure research, of pure asking people, peer surveying, to determine what it is they were looking for in this sort of educational marketing to teach educational marketing.
So you had warm-blooded human beings to talk to. They'd given you an indication that they had this demand, and then you interviewed them to find out exactly what they wanted. If you don't have that market built up already, if you don't have customers, then really you have to go to social media, to communities, put some content out there, see if you can get feedback, right? You have to start attracting people first.
That's true. And that's actually what we did going forward from that point, because, you know, Brian has started building this audience with Copyblogger. So we kind of had this this area that we could gather more information about. So we took what I had learned from being out and speaking to different industries and working with them, and what Brian had kind of learned from marketing and copywriting, from that audience of writers and content creators that he was starting to build with Copyblogger. And we kind of fused those two together by using these same type of things, surveying, putting out content, comments, you know, culling through the questions that were asked in comments, both on his blog and on mine, really helped out a lot. We actually, we did a couple of, I had done some podcasts back at the early days of podcasting with this. and used it as a Q&A to start gathering some questions. We did a couple of video things. We did a lot of different things around the blogs to get an idea of how we can refine this. So it was sort of a hybrid of, you know, what I found in the small business community out there and the medium-sized enterprise community, and then what the audience that we're actually going to be targeting this for. We use the that sort of research type of thing to that specific market to very tightly refine what it is the offering was going to be, so we could get that initial MVP out there.
Yeah, and we'll probably talk about this quite a lot, but it's one of those things where it's very much about doing what's indicated, and that's a phrase that Tony uses quite a lot. You can put content out there and see, as Tony said, the comments that come back, how many shares it gets, how many retweets, how many people really spread it and discuss it. But look for the impact that you're having. What are you doing? What are you sharing that's giving people the maximum impact or that has the most urgency about it? Because you might have four or five different ideas, but one of them is going to really resonate with people. So how did you know that this was going to be the thing to pursue with Brian?
As we started to refine it, we started looking at what types of things people were indicating. Like you had just said, we put together some blog posts. I'd written a series on video white papers to kind of target that audience of what are people looking for as far as educational marketing. Brian had done tutorial at that point. So that was sort of another area that was sort of touching on this. So we had a few different areas, a few different things going on that kind of helped us kind of refine that message or that target. And then we put something together. And that's really what we started out from is you start with that and then you put something together that creates your minimum viable product. And you know enough about the audience you're going after, what their needs are, where their pain points are, that you can put together that basic product and then you start getting additional feedback.
Yeah. And you see that in the software world all the time, the alpha and the beta test. But this isn't some crappy, flaky software you're putting out that's just bad. You're putting out something that's actually really good, but reduced scope. So how did you determine that 20% of the scope that would give 80% of the benefit?
This is something I'd been doing in my previous life as a consultant and working with different software developers and product developers to work with clients. It was a methodology that I developed that allowed us to really kind of pick the key features, the core features that we knew would have the most impact initially, and put together a quality product with a limited budget. So that really in the previous world that I was working in, I worked a lot with people in the power industry. We did some government work, we did banking work. And one of the things that's a good approach to get into that type of world is to demonstrate that you can put together a quality product on a limited budget, and then they give you more money to expand on it. So I took that same model to this where, you know, we were coming out of pocket, we were bootstrapping. That was always the intent. So the idea was we do have a limited budget and a limited amount of time. What can we get in this that would have the most impact right out of the gate so that when people buy it, they want it and then they want more added onto it. Not that they get it and think, wow, this is a beta product. This is not ready for prime time yet.
And that's one of the key things that people miss about the MVP process. They think it's about getting the product out there and getting paid. But you have to give people something they want to keep. Otherwise, you have a massive launch and then they all refund. And we've seen that with, we'll not mention any names, but we've seen other people's launches where it's been a terrific launch, but then the refund rate and the chargeback rate has been horrendous, right?
It has. And I'm not going to get into specific numbers, but our refund rates were some of the lowest that anybody in our industry had ever seen. When we were getting started with information products and we shared what our refund rate was with some of our colleagues, they were just astounded. They actually didn't believe us at one point. One of them literally did not believe what we were saying about refunds because the idea was this should be a quality product in and of itself. If we decided to, you know, close up shop and move on, this product that they have would be something that was worth the money that they paid. But knowing full well that we weren't going to do that, that we're going to continue to expand on it and make it better and eventually charge more money for it.
Yeah. And we've actually done the same thing with Rainmaker, the Rainmaker platform. And part of the deal is how you achieve that result. So the deal we give people is, here's what we've got. We think it's going to be a great solution for you, but we need your help. We need your feedback. So in return for getting the best deal that there'll ever be, the best price there'll ever be, in return, the catch is you have to give us your feedback. That's the deal. And it's the process of co-creation. So you're saying you're going to get in early, which is a benefit on its own. You're going to get behind the scenes. You're going to be able to steer the ship. You're going to be able to help us course correct. So we give you exactly what you need, which is a lot of power and influence over a product. And yeah, on our side, we get all that great feedback.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that feedback is key, is determining what feedback to use and what feedback not to use. And really, it's another one of those doing what's indicated. I mean, if there is something that's obviously missing from a feature set that is obviously missing from your product, you'll hear about it over and over again. We used to have a method that we don't use as much now, but we did use in the beginning. I used with my previous company. We had an algorithm set up in our tracking that when we put in requests, feature requests, it would actually just disappear from the list until at least X number of people had requested the same thing. And then it would show up on the list. That avoided us having to look at hundreds and hundreds of requests that were obviously one-off things that weren't going to meet a larger audience. So learning how to look at feedback and really determine, this is a pain point that everybody is asking for, or a majority of people are asking for, versus here is something that, you know, 5% of the audience needs, or something else that can cause you problems, is people are saying they want something, but they don't really want that something. They want the end result. So you may find a better way, a more elegant way to give them that end result. And if you were to give them exactly what they asked for, it actually may be a disaster.
Exactly. And again, it goes back to that 20% of scope that will give 80% of the benefit, because it's so easy to gold plate. I get overexcited, and I'm sure Tony's seen this firsthand, where I'll think, we need to have this feature, and then we need to do this, and we need to add this. But is it going to satisfy the core needs right now, the priority needs right now? And you always have to rein yourself in. And one of the things that we do, especially with the Rainmaker platform, it's come in very, very handy, is dog fooding. And it sounds horrible, but it's one of those phrases from software development that sticks around, partly because it's horrible. And it means eating your own dog food. So we have colleagues who use the Rainmaker platform for their own sites. So when Rafael experiences using the Rainmaker platform, when Pamela uses the Rainmaker platform, when newrainmaker.com and the forthcoming developments are all built on Rainmaker, we see firsthand how it works and how effective it is. And then we can put our feedback into the process. And that's given us a lot of insight that you wouldn't have just looking at it in the abstract.
Exactly. When you're using it, you're using it as a customer, where if you're building it, a lot of times you're building it as a designer or an engineer or a creator. And a lot of times the creator's mindset is very different than the end user's mindset. And by going for a success ratio for your customers, that what this is trying to achieve is ultimately customer success. What is that success they're trying to achieve? Now, from a creator standpoint, there may be some really cool features or some cool things that you want in there, but it may not be what your users are really looking for. And you'll find that if you look at some of the articles and research and surveys they've done on the top things that cause startups to fail or products to fail, it's because somebody built a product for a product that nobody wants, because they built a product and then tried to find an audience, versus looking for the pain points, asking for those pain points, building a starting point for that, and then building off of that to the actual usage to fill out the product and kind of make it better as they go.
Yeah. And if you're using the MVP process to build an education product like Teaching Sales was, use your own checklists. Either develop them from what you actually do, or go back and test your checklist that you developed for the content for the course, and make sure it works in the real world, because real world education is always better than the abstract, generic, one size fits all education that works for nobody in particular. So if you can actually road test what you're doing again, it's like dog fooding. If you can actually use it, then you know it's going to work and you have the confidence, and that confidence does come across.
It does. And once you've established that this is a starting point I can build from, and then you get the feedback, and then you have all of this data that you've collected, this information that you've gotten back from people actually using it. Something like a information product, especially, we have a saying that everything is content. So if you're actually using your product and you start to see how you're doing something, you can write a module around that. We did that a lot. We would be doing something. We would be marketing teaching cells and using a technique and saying, this is great to sell teaching cells, but we also need to put this in teaching cells to teach the people that we're giving or selling this product to use this as well. And that kind of that feedback loop, where you yourself are part of that feedback loop as a user, makes a big difference than the creator sitting on high coming up with ideas about how to make my audience wow.
And that's where you get fantastic testimonials, case studies, because all that feedback and that proof, both from you and from your students or your customers, that all works for your marketing. So in the launch, you can reinforce your launch by saying, we had all these people go through, 80% of them got all the way through to the end. This is the feedback they gave us. These are the specifics of what they liked. You don't have to tell people what they didn't like necessarily. Mm-hmm. And that all feeds into your marketing.
It does. And another thing that does, something we'll cover in a later show in more detail, is building a community that you can rely on for feedback. Because here is a group that has demonstrated that they love what you do, but they're not afraid to speak up when there's something they would rather see done differently. So that's something we'll cover later, but that community is part of it. And it starts out with that MVP. You start building your community. We call it a minimum viable community. Just like we had a minimum viable audience. You start off with your audience, you build a core community of people that are using your products, and they become your champions to help you grow it as you go.
Yeah, and they're super engaged because they're part of that co-creation process. So it all goes together.
Exactly.
So that co-creation question, is this something you might be interested in? Here's the deal. Starts the launch. And that's one of the three key pieces of a launch. So we're going to go into detail with launches later. But for now, just know that there's three key pieces to a launch. The first is the pre-sale, which is something that a lot of people miss out. They just open the shopping cart and they say, here it is. And it's like, wait, what? Surprise.
I just want to jump in real quick with the pre-sale thing, because what you just said about jumping right into the cart, people don't realize how detrimental that is to the feedback loop, because you can actually get a ton of good feedback and information from your initial pre-launch. You put up content about what's coming and then look at the comments and the emails you get. It will help guide what people are expecting so that you can put that into your marketing and make sure the product is really meeting what those expectations are that people are starting to go, they're starting to tell you right now what those expectations are.
Yeah. And all of the questions you get are potential objections that you need to overcome.
Exactly.
So you have to do the pre-sale buzz. You have to do the telegraphing that something is coming. It doesn't have to be done in a sneaky way. It doesn't have to be done in a teaser way. But people buy with their minds before they buy with a credit card. So you have to get that in front of them early. The next part is the bit that everybody does, which is opens the shopping cart. But there's a way of doing it. You can say, okay, you can buy this thing now, or you can actually speak to the outcome and the benefit that it's going to bring for people. People don't want your product. And if you have a secret, they would rather have it on the back of a postcard than have to go through your entire course. So saying that it's 300 pages isn't going to speak to people. They want the outcome. They want to have that change, that solution. They want to fix the problem, or they want to achieve the goal. So don't just say, I've got this thing that's available. Tell them what it's going to do for people. And this is the third part, is often abused. Often people fib and they lie. But you have to say it's going away, especially when you're doing an MVP, because remember all that feedback that you're trying to gather. There's only so much feedback you can cope with. And as Tony explained earlier, a lot of the feature requests are going to have to be prioritized. So you need to close that shopping cart, and that will add urgency and scarcity, because when you say you're closing it, that gives people a deadline and it means they have to make a decision.
Yeah, one of the things that you'll find with using that three-point process is you're getting feedback at every step, and you're also building up a expectation and a reputation of, I'm able to deliver what I said I delivered, but I can only do it for a small group right now because you are the special group. You're the charter group. You're the pilot group. And that's not just BS. That's true, because this core group is really going to help refine the product as you go. So you're being very honest about the fact that this is a special group. This is a group of people who get in on the ground floor and are able to help shape the product at a cheaper price. But I can only have, you know, X number of people do that. So none of this is, as Chris was saying, it's not a fib, it's not a lie. It's creating scarcity, but it's not false scarcity. It's true scarcity. There's an actual reason behind it other than just marketing. It's making sure that you get the people that are really going to help shape this as you go forward.
Yeah. So the next thing you need to do is use that feedback to iterate. So you'll go back, you'll improve the product. You might be improving it on an ongoing basis, especially if it's a live education deal. But you need to iterate. And that means getting that feedback, processing it, and prioritizing it. So again, we've got a three-step process, but this is for the prioritization. The must-haves are your priority ones, the things that are absolutely essential. Determining that can be tricky, but if something comes up a lot in the feedback, or if it's very strenuously put towards the feedback, you know, if they're practically shouting it, you know it's a priority one. And through your dog fooding, you'll know if it's a priority one. Priority two is non-essential but significant benefit, and priority three is nice to haves. You absolutely have to get all your priority ones in, but set yourself a deadline. Set yourself a deadline for when you're going to open that shopping cart again, and make sure you get the priority ones based around that deadline, or set the deadline based on when you can get the priority ones done. And that's something we're going to talk about a lot in future episodes. We're going to talk about sprints. Just know that you're going to define a time when you're going to get all this stuff done, because you have accountability to your community and your customers, and you need to set extra accountability so you don't procrastinate. Procrastination will absolutely kill this process.
Yes, it does. And knowing you're prioritizing kind of helps make it less likely you're going to procrastinate. Because remember, the whole do what's indicated thing is really just listening. It's about listening. And, you know, if something is important to your customers, it will keep coming up. It will not go away. And if it keeps coming up, it's something that needs to be prioritized high, and you can put it in to get it, you know, in that cycle of iteration before you release again. You can set your goals of when you're going to have that available. And this applies to all types of products, whether it's a software product, whether it's a design product, whether it's an information product. Any type of content or any type of creative thing can go through the same iteration of the iterative process, because what you're doing is you're just really making things better based on the data you receive. It's all about putting something out there that's quality, but that's limited in scope. Getting feedback on what that scope should be the next time, and then putting that in and delivering what you say you're going to deliver, and just keep doing that over and over again.
Exactly. So next time we're going to talk about building effective sales funnels, and we'll talk about the minimum viable sales process. You'll notice there's a bit of a trend in what we're talking about here. So we've got another minimum viable process to talk about. What is the one thing you think people should take away from this today, Tony?
I think the most important thing to remember is what we've been talking about all along, the 20%, focus on that 20%, get that in the product, deliver something of quality, get the feedback from the people that are actually using it so they can co-create it, this initial group of people that will continue to grow to build your community, which we'll talk about that in more detail. And then it's not about just getting it something out there. It's about getting a high quality something out there that you can build on, both an audience and customers, and build a product on.
Fantastic. So keep listening to The Mainframe, and we'll see you next time.